Welcome to CMO Combo, the podcast where we deep dive into the minds of chief marketing officers from across the globe. Every week, we bring you candid conversations with top CMOs who share their experiences, strategies, and insights into the ever-evolving world of marketing leadership. Join us as we learn from the cream of the crop, uncovering the secrets to their success and the lessons learned along the way. Whether you're an aspiring CMO, a seasoned marketing leader, or just passionate about the art and science of marketing, CMO Convo is your go-to source for inspiration and actionable insights.
Hi, Ramon. Thanks so much for joining us on CMO Convo today.
Anthony, an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great. So I just think before we get started with this topic today, I'm sure our audience would just love to hear a little bit more about you and how you found yourself in the position you are now and kind of what it is about your role that kind of, I don't know, fills you with passion and drive and keeps you going.
Yeah. You know, I'm my name is Ramon Soto. I'm a senior vice president here at Northwell Health. I am the chief marketing communications officer. I've been in this role for the last 10 years. I work for a storied healthcare system in the metro New York market. We serve about 6 million New Yorkers each year. We're a fairly large institution, the largest private employer in the state of New York. We have about 85,000 employees, 21 hospitals, about 900 different ports of entry for consumers to interact with us. I'll tell you, my career has always been marketing. I started in the agency world. I worked for a period of time for General Electric, running marketing for some of their businesses. And then for about 11 years, I was at Aetna and I ran global marketing for them. I was really enticed to come to Northwell, partially because of a health event that I went through. And I saw how there was such tremendous room for opportunity to engage with consumers very differently than we historically have. Here you go through a health event, you enter this mystery, you're trying to demystify it. How do we surround them with information to help them on their journey? And Northwell is an incredibly progressive organization, really trying to smash the status quo, reimagine, reinvent how we interact with consumers and how we take the healthcare journey with them, how we get them better. And I work for our CEO, Michael Dowling. You know, I came for the man crush. He's a believer in change, and he's given me a tremendous amount of runway to explore new ways of interacting with individuals. And it's been a dream job ever since. You know, I have to pinch myself. I often joke with him that I have the best job in healthcare because I get to be the chief storyteller for this incredible organization.
I mean, it's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, and that's ultimately, it's funny, I did a recording the other day where we were talking about marketing as storytelling. And in your case, it's really with this strategy, it's really taken that to another level and really emphasized that in particular. I was just wondering, like, I mean, do you call this purpose-driven marketing? Is that what you refer to it?
Yeah, the wrapper is purpose-driven marketing. It's really movement marketing. So, yeah. And I'll tell you a little bit about the origins of it.
Yeah, great.
So Northwell is a fairly new brand. We're about a 30-year-old company, and we compete in probably the most hyper-competitive market in the U.S., where consumers just have great choices on who they can actually go to see for their healthcare journey. So part of the issue for us was, how do we differentiate ourselves and tell our story, but in a really different way? And then how do we tell it in a much more relevant way to individuals? And if you're a student of healthcare in the U.S., a lot of organizations, they will talk about the transaction. They'll talk about, I'm the best at heart care, I'm the number one at orthopedics. I do world-leading neurosurgery. If you actually do the consumer research, very few consumers actually seeing them in that place in life where they need those services. So we wanted to reimagine that and take the longitudinal journey with consumers and speak in much more relevant terms.
Yeah.
Healthcare as a category, you know, if you have your health, it fuels your life, your love, your passion, your careers. And if you don't have it, you don't have much. And if you use that as the basis, then all these different real interesting stories can come out. And we can have individuals know us before they need us. And that was really the strategic aim of this different avenue that we pushed down.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great strategy, isn't it? In terms of, you know, people talk about what you need is to establish that kind of sense of trust, isn't it? You know, and this idea that people can get to know us through a form of entertainment and see us authentically. It's such a fantastic idea, really. And you know, the way that, for example, Lennox Hill, I know I'm jumping ahead here, but I'm going to start.
Yeah,
the way that that's established with, you know, like these kind of human stories behind closed doors is such a fantastic way to get people to connect with your brand on in an authentic way, I think.
Yes.
You know, no actors, you know, just real people, you know? Yeah.
You use a lot of important concepts and words. The stories themselves are all fueled in what happens in healthcare, but you don't really see it. So we invite consumers in to see what happens behind the glass. Mm-hmm. And I can show them the intimacy of the interaction with the doctors, the characters that they really are, and they're extreme characters in the best use of that word. It is, in many cases, this is a lifestyle. This isn't just a job. And, I can show the intimacy of the teams that surround the patients with unconditional love and care. And I can show them the journey. And the reality is I can't buy enough 30-second ads to show that intimacy. So when you turn that into content creation, I can engage an audience. I can entertain them. I can show them these really intimate things, and then they have a different impression of my brand after the experience. You know, it's not, it's kind of a different chapter, but a similar playbook for when you think of what Mattel did with Barbie and have this iconic access, this iconic asset, and how do I make it more relevant in culture and bring it forward? And in a really cammy way, show women empowerment and how society it has historically done or dealt with strong women, these kind of cultural figures. It is a different play on that playbook. And it's using really the content itself as the tool. And then it drives business benefit as well. I wouldn't do it if it didn't. All the research suggests that consumers who are exposed to the content have a much better impression of my brand post the exposure and are much more likely to use us post the exposure. So we've done quite a few of these, and we have a pipeline of additional projects that we're super excited about.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, because one of the questions I was going to ask you, and you've sort of already answered it, but I wanted to kind of touch on it a little bit again. And what I always ask with any strategy on the podcast is, like, kind of why now is what I see. And just drawing from my own research a little bit is kind of like, you know, they often say that consumers now are kind of, they value authenticity more than anything now. And they kind of, you know, and I think it's like what you were saying in a way. It's like you can dress up someone in a lab coat and have like the best production values in the world, but most people are still going to watch that and say, that's an actor, you know, that's somebody.
Absolutely.
So I was wondering if what you're doing is a response to a need for authenticity in the kind of current market, or what was that?
So it's a great question. And authenticity is certainly a key ingredient to the formula. I think if you click down a level, there's just this distrust that the market has on large institutions and big brands, right? Are they truly here for me?
Yes.
And you know, healthcare has historically been there for consumers. We saw that through COVID. But there's also this fatigue of healthcare. So how do we use a medium that allows people to draw themselves in? And how do we use human interest that intersects with culture, that intersects with story or healthcare as the medium of delivery to show that authenticity?
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult to prove it otherwise. You can say I'm the best, but
everyone else is saying that.
Inviting people in to touch and feel and engage with who you are and how you go to market differently has proven super beneficial to us. So it is, it's fun too. It's a very different kind of path for healthcare. Most health systems don't do this because of the risk associated with it. But if you prepare yourselves well, and if you don't sacrifice on incredible storytelling, you can create really compelling content, and you can engage your audience very differently.
Yeah. So when you just use that word again, storytelling, and I wanted to get back to that. It's sort of like, I guess in a way, someone could look at what you've done and see it as kind of a departure, really like a kind of real left turn, you know? But when you actually think about it, like, you know, in sort of presenting, this serialized story, obviously taking true people, it's kind of, it's embellishing the kind of key aspects of what a good go-to-market strategy always is anyway, isn't it? In a way, when you actually think about what you're doing, in essence, it's not that much of a departure. It's just kind of drilling down to what actually really matters with these kind of things, you know?
Listen, unscripted content has been around forever.
Yeah.
Product placement has been around forever.
Yeah.
You know, these big brands show up in blockbusters all the time, and they have forever. And then there's you know, iconic relationships that take place over time with these brands, Aston Martin and 007, for example.
Yeah, of course.
You really have to dig into the strategy underneath, in terms of why these brands place themselves in these really engaging, interesting moments. And it is a common concept for big brands to do this. It is uncommon for healthcare to do this.
Yeah.
It's just, healthcare organizations are very used to their 30-second ads or content creation, putting it online, hoping somebody finds them. And in a world where content is changing and how we engage with consumers is changing almost real time, a number of years ago, we had to take a step back and really reimagine how we were going to engage with consumers. And this whole approach was born out of an early phase analysis that we did when we were rebranding. And we looked at retail, we looked at digital retail, we looked at financial services, and we looked at entertainment. Uh-huh. And specifically, we looked at Disney and Marvel and how they story told. And Marvel in and of itself was the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is this powerful platform. You know, the historic model in Hollywood has been, you don't do one movie. If it's a blockbuster, you do a sequel. Maybe you get a third sequel in, and you retire the franchise because it's been burned out, and you move on. Marvel's created over 20 movies that are told over time that are all linked together.
Yeah.
And there's this really powerful character development behind each of the stars. You have heroes, you have anti-heroes. You have many of the raw ingredients that exist in healthcare. You have this really interesting construct and tension behind these characters that then try to apply itself to kind of these moments in culture. And so it's a very different expression of that model, but what we do plays out over time. We have our physicians as the heroes. We have consumers who are experiencing a health event. These disease states are the villains in healthcare. The status quo is the villain in healthcare. And so how do we then take all those raw ingredients and walk with an individual over time. That's one of the reasons that we love the docudrama format. For Lenox Hill, that was 9 episodes that I told over time. And you can take this really interesting journey over almost a 2-year time span with these doctors. And you got to know the characters, and you got to know the patients, and you got to see them fight healthcare injustice and build this really intimate relationship where we had people who were watching, who were cheering the heroes on and cheering our patients on. And at the end of it, you have this desire for more. It's exactly what led to Emergency NYC, our second endeavor with Netflix, almost a spinoff, but an extension of the story, the next phase. And we're happy to say that we'll continue to do more of these. And we have actually quite a bit of interest in the market to continue to do more of these. So that playbook applied to our industry, that helps us to differentiate in a really different way than others. Like, no other brand in our market shows up like we do, which is great.
Has anyone actually done this before?
You know, there are some brands like Mayo Clinic did a documentary about their history. So it was a little bit more retrospective. We have not come across another healthcare brand that does this in this kind of way. And I like not having the lane occupied, so I'll take it.
Yeah. So your kind of vision for this then is like Marvel. To build a kind of, I guess, a kind of cinematic universe in a way, like you have all these different shows.
Yeah. So think of all the categories that healthcare plays in. Think of all the locations that it plays out. Think of the different angles. I have my own Air Force. We have 2 jets that fly around the country to pick up transplant organs to bring them back to our organizations to save people's lives or to fly critically ill patients who need a higher level of care. I've got 2 helicopters that do that as well. I got a transport fleet of hundreds of vehicles that interact with individuals every day. I have 6 million patients each year that I can tease out the fraction of 1% that are truly human interest and use that from a content creation standpoint. And I can talk about issues that are really important to talk about. You know, we're trying to use our brand to push into gun violence. In 2019, this absurd thing happened. Guns became the leading cause of death of children in the United States. It is absurd that this nation is in this place. Can we use storytelling and engagement to share that absurdity and bend the curve on gun violence? Can I do social good through these platforms as well? 'Cause 80% of healthcare consumption is driven by your lifestyle, socioeconomic factors, who you are, where you live, your family history. I can't control those pieces, but can I call attention to them and drive resources or capabilities that help us on the social side of this equation? So this cinematic universe has a lot of legs. We've done something like 7 projects to date. 2 with Netflix, 1 with National Geographic, 1 recently with HBO on mental health.
The
One South show. We've done 2 NBC specials on veterans and veterans health. And then we have a couple more in the pipeline that we're pretty sure will be great content and picked up.
So I want to know, like, I really wish I'd been a fly on the wall, you know, when this kind of plan, when the initial seed of it. And I just want to go, like, trace back, like, what leads you to this as a project? Like, what line of thinking? Was it just conversations that you were having with people within your org? Was it a eureka moment? Like, how did this come about? Like, initially, how did you start talking about this?
To be honest, this was, and I'm always honest, so to be candid, this was the intersection of strategy and luck. So
right. a lot of things are often, you
as
know,
as I mentioned, we had analyzed entertainment and we loved how entertainment engages with audiences. Yeah. and you build fans, you build super fans, and you build franchises, and you build culture, you storytell, and it's tactile too. You can touch and feel and interact. So we were looking at how we could use entertainment from an engagement standpoint, but not necessarily on the content side. And then we were approached by two showrunners, Ruthie and Adi from Yolari Films. And they had done a successful series in Israel that was very similar to Lenox Hill. And they were shopping it in the US, and I believe they were shopping it in the UK as well. And it was fortuitous. That was the luck part. Because most tel systems were rejecting engagements like this. Like New York Presbyterian was sued years ago because they had a release of PHI in a emergency room series that they did. So they dabbled in it. They got bit. They retrenched. And everybody else was saying no. And we thought, hey, you know what? This is actually pretty unique. It was really important that culturally, Ruthie and Adi were aligned to us, and they consider themselves really social storytellers. Mm-hmm. We consider ourselves a purpose-driven brand, mission-driven organization. They want to do social good through the creation of content. That was the perfect alignment with what we wanted to do. And a couple of conversations led to me pitching to my CEO, who, you know, after he gave me the Spock guy, he was like, do you think we can really do something with this? And I said, yeah, so I think it's worth the bet anyway. And we did it. And it turned into a really powerful success. The Lenox Hill show was received with critical acclaim.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes, I saw. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was you know, whether it was Rotten Tomatoes or any other rating platform, consumers really were drawn to the content, and critics as well were applauding the content. So we knew we had something, a really interesting platform there. And that in turn led to other endeavors with Yolari Films. And they're great partners of ours, will be great partners in the future. And we've had really great endeavors with others. The really unique thing about it is because we've shown an aptitude to do this and a willingness to do it, others have stepped forward and pitched us. So, you know, we have quite a pipeline of opportunities that we're evaluating to move forward on.
That's great. Yeah. I was wondering, you mentioned that there were risks involved, and maybe they're obvious, but I want to just go into that a little bit here, like sort of like what the hesitancy or potentially what could go wrong with this kind of strategy if it's mishandled. Yeah. You must have weighed this up when you went about it. So what would we need to consider if we were sort of weighing this kind of strategy?
I'll explain them in kind of a few dimensions. The first is the stories need to tell themselves, right? So you can't force a doctor into a scenario. The clinicians have to be able to carry the story. So we often do casting calls for clinicians to participate. And there's a screening process in that. So if you're a clinician, you're a doctor, you're considered for a part, and you don't get it, it actually leads to really interesting tension on the back end. And that has to be managed. You can't just leave that. You know, if you screen 50 doctors for something and only four are chosen, you really have to actively manage that process. And the relationships that are involved there. Secondly, it's very disruptive. So
yes, of course.
The filming process, it's not like you're at a studio, you're in typically a hospital setting, a clinical setting, a physician practice, and you have workflows that are purpose-driven to get people through to a state of better health. You have operating rooms that may be tied up. You have just an impact to the daily operations of a business. So we need really strong administrative partners on the ground who are very supportive of us and the disruption that can take place. You also have to factor that into how you film. So there's not, we use a low impact film crew historically, typically one camera, maybe two at most, minimal setup, minimal disruption. It's kind of run and gun is the format that we like to use. There's not a lot of rigging. There's not a lot of setup. There's not a lot of build up, break down, so that you minimize the impact to the assets that you're taking offline to do the actual filming. So the mechanics and logistics are a big consideration.
Of course, Emergency
NYC is a great example of that. Like, we had two ambulances that were dedicated to the film. We had our helicopter that was assigned to pick up specific storylines that we wanted to tell. And then the third bucket, and this is probably this is where we have to be the most thoughtful, is the patient interaction and the patient permission.
Yeah, and dignity.
So I have to make sure that, you know, that this individual consents appropriately to having their story told. There's a legal process that we absolutely have to abide by. There's also a just being a good partner with the patient and, you know, making sure we capture the content, that we share the content with them, that they're comfortable with how they're represented in the content. That is all really time consuming from a logistics standpoint. So you take all three of those buckets together. And it is not for everybody. It's actually quite hard to do, but we have a team that we've assembled over time who's very thoughtful on our end. We got strong legal partners at Northwell. We've got excellent external legal advisors who are from the entertainment industry, and they help us package and help us protect and help us showcase our work.
Yeah. And in terms of telling the stories, then what kind of planning goes into that? Because, I mean, it is reality, right? So how are these stories chosen? Do you sort of meet together and say, this is what the story that we want to tell this particular season? And then how does it work?
It's typically not that prescriptive there. Yeah. We start at the storyline level.
Yeah.
And the types of content we want to capture. So it's, what's the patient journey look like? What's the intimacy of the interaction with the physician and the patient? How do we tell that from a clinical setting, an operating room setting? How do you tell the backstory of the patient? How do you tell the backstory of the physician? So those macro categories of content we want to capture, we usually will discuss and agree to, but it is unscripted content. So you're capturing in the moment and you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. And I can tell you for Emergency NYC, we captured something like 7 terabytes worth of data or the content, servers full of content. Maybe we used, Lord, I'd say 5% of what we captured.
Yeah, I can believe it.
So the yield is quite low, but you were looking for exceptional storytelling. And we try not to compromise at all on the exceptional storytelling. So you're looking for these nuggets.
Yeah.
And it's like gold mining. So you got to find the nugget. And sometimes it's frustrating. Other times you're elated and you're amazed at what you actually capture and you can share with an audience. It becomes very, very powerful.
And what better showing for your brand than making like your practitioners the heroes, you know, in a way which
absolutely.
They are anyway, but that's obviously what comes through. Yeah.
You know, in some cases there's sung heroes. In many cases, there's unsung heroes as well. Those are my favorite characters. Emergency NYC, we followed two EMTs along their days. They are the most beautiful of people. You know, they're truly kind of mission driven, and they really care. They care about each other. You see the team forming. You see the team in action. You see the intimacy of their daily engagements. They're both friends. You see how they interact with the doctors. You see how it truly is a team that gets people to a better state of health. Just very, very powerful.
It is very powerful. I mean, the subject in of itself is powerful, isn't it? I mean, we all, you know, a life and illness and people struggling through it, it resonates, doesn't it? It's easy to resonate with anyone, you know.
Why is Grey's Anatomy so popular?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
It becomes the platform for the storytelling, but to your point, it's human interest, it's human intrigue, it's complicated stories, it's in some cases life and death. Mm-hmm. It's pain and suffering, it's recovery and joy. It affects the individual, it affects their family, it affects their extended family. There is a family that partners with these individuals to get them to a better place. It is an expression of unconditional love for them. You know, no questions asked, we're here for you. And we move you hopefully to this place of better health. It becomes super powerful. And you see, by the way, you see the frustrations and the human interest and the human interactions. Some of them not so nice. You know, I remember Lenox Hill, one of our doctors was complaining about some challenge that he was experiencing administratively. Mm. Now, the brand steward that I am, I remember thinking in the back of my head, man, do I really want that out there? But it's the reality of the job, and it's the challenges of the job. And it's this individual's creativity to get the resources that he needs in order to provide consumers the best care possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into compelling content. So you have to let it breathe. You have to let it air. You have to really be a good steward of storytelling. You got to remember why you're doing it. You can't, it's not a 30-second ad. You can't do the high curation of the content. You can't always get the extremely high production values. You can't have, you know, the manicured actress on stage performing the lines that you've fed them. You have what you see every day, and then you stitch together. And this, I have deep respect for my partners, who are the content creators, in what they do, because they take interactions and they turn it into magic that draw people in and create this compelling narrative and content.
It's a tricky tightrope you're walking, isn't it, in a way, though, like you just said.
It is. I hope not to fall off, by the way.
Because obviously, you know, you want it to reflect well on your brand. You know, that's the truth. You want it to have positive business outcome. But at the same time, you know that if you start messing around with this and manipulating it too much, people are going to see right through it, aren't they? People can see through this thing. Yeah, that's the thing.
That's why when we enter these endeavors, we maintain edit rights just to make sure that what we're filming is a safe environment, that consumer privacy is protected. But we give up editorial narrative. You know, the showrunners own the storytelling. Yeah, and that's where the trust has to be. That's where they're producing the best product that is going to be true and authentic and hopefully show your brand in its best light. But that comes with its own tension sometimes. You know, it is an interesting give and take. And it creates, first of all, you take these really deep journeys with these individuals and creates these bonds that are quite powerful on the partner side of the equation. And you start to develop a sense of how these partners work together, the sensitivities that they have, the likes, dislikes, the wants. You know, sometimes we get requests from our partners and they're hard requests to fulfill because they might be disruptive to a particular business setting, but we make it happen. And sometimes it creates great content, sometimes it doesn't. And then you move on to whatever the next opportunity is.
Yeah, it's great. So let's talk about then, beyond the success of the show, what is the positive impact that you've seen on the business that you're on your organization? What's happened as a result?
I think it's two dimensions. So, and it depends on the kind of content that we're creating. So the on the pure business side of the equation, let's go back to emergency AMC. That is a great example. So Emergency MIC, in the first 2 months that it was aired, it peaked at the number 5 show of all streaming platforms in the US. We're competing with Ted Lasso and a bunch of other brands. It's super interesting. I have something like 59 million hours of viewership on my brand. Netflix, their platform, these aren't the right numbers, but it's the right order of magnitude. It's something like 250 million people on the platform. About 40% of them are United States, the rest are global. And you start getting phone calls from overseas, like people who see the show, who have a health issue, who want to interact with your brand, to come over and seek services. And that is that's hard to kind of give the tangible, but you get the really interesting business patterns that start to emerge post the show execution. And then, we measure everything. We did our research for that particular show. Nationally, something like 15% of the U.S. market was exposed to that content. In New York, roughly 1 out of every 5 New Yorkers was exposed to the content. And we do pre-post analysis. If you weren't exposed to the content, and then your exposure to the content, what's the brand impact? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't do much for awareness, only because a lot of consumers know us in the New York market. But what it does is all the other brand metrics, including consideration, like would I consider this company for services? So we saw a 17% lift. Of consumers who are more likely to seek healthcare services from Northwell than those who are not exposed to the content. So we were really pleased with the results. So that's the business side. Then there's the social side. So One South is our latest collaboration with HBO.
Yeah.
It is, it follows a group of college students who were suicidal. So Northwell runs the only one of its kind program in the US, where we've teamed with over 90 colleges in the Northeast, and they will send us their college students who have these extreme mental health issues, and in this case, specifically suicides. They come in an inpatient setting. They're at a hospital, our behavioral health hospital, our mental health hospital called Zucker. And they go through this deep intervention. You see them at their most vulnerable, like literally first episode. It's a 2-episode project, the 2 1-hour episodes. The first episode is kids in crisis. They're admitted to the program. They're shaking. They're reflecting. Really heart-wrenching stories. There's this one girl comes from a, this one woman who comes from a kind of a tough family life. Can't keep a relationship with a boyfriend, has a tough relationship with her mom, decides to go to sleep with a shotgun. And luckily there was a welfare checkup by the police. She was admitted into the program. She enters into the program. She's shaking literally when she comes in. And so it's not that particular show, One South, it's not for everybody, but it's an important communication on what's taking place in society today. And it's this mental health epidemic that largely is a byproduct of COVID. Maybe COVID was an accelerant of it, because a lot of the root issues behind it have already existed in society. But it's an important cultural message to share.
Yeah, and it's definitely something you're seeing in America. I mean, excuse me if I'm you speak me out of turn at any time here. Obviously, I'm not a US citizen, but from what I've seen, like, you know, in terms of homelessness crisis and drug addiction and everything, that seems to be a big problem in a lot of cities at the moment. That all ties back to mental health, doesn't it? It's a big kind of thing.
You had this past weekend an individual who, in some way, shape, or form, rationalized in their head that it was a good idea to take a shot at the president, the former president of the United States.
Of course,
And it is, you know, it affects our children. It affects society. It's this moment in time where we have to talk about this.
Yeah.
And so building social awareness of this, creating these conversations, so important. What I loved about that show in particular was the second episode, the second 1 hour, was more about kids in recovery and how they were bonding with each other and bonding with the clinicians that were teaching them coping skills. And at the end of the show, that same woman who was shaking when she was admitted, you saw her smiling and thriving and in this beautiful place because she's a beautiful individual. The outcomes of that particular program are excellent. They're 80%+. It is this important message that early identification of these mental health issues, particularly if you can catch kids when they're kids, leads to much better outcomes. So how do we create this movement to identify these issues and get people to the care that they need and a better state of care? It's also hopefully a call out to society that we need more of these resources, and the reimbursements are not there. It's very difficult to seek out care. Honestly, the science is already there. We have solutions. So we just have to find a way to map need to access and expand the access and the capabilities that we have in the markets that we serve. So in that case, it's much less business. I lose money in that case. But I want to tell the message because it's an important social message. The gun violence stuff is the same. You know, in our first episode of Emergency NYC, there's a vignette where you see a kid who is the victim of gun violence, and you see him enter into Cohen's Children's Medical Center, our flagship children's hospital. And you see the team of individuals who descend on this kid and provide unconditional love and do what he needs to stabilize him and to get him to a better sense of care. You see how we engage with and interact with the family and the mom to get her to this better state. I didn't do that to get to see more gun violence victims. I did that because there's an important social message to communicate and hopefully telegraph. We have to take a step back from society and be better than where we are today.
Yeah.
And healthcare has this really unique brand permission to engage with audiences really differently. And from that standpoint, let's use the assets we have to help bend these curves. They're cultural and social imperatives for us to step forward and use our platforms in a really important way.
Absolutely. I read an article, I think it was talking about how you compared having a gun in the house to owning a pet tiger or something like that. Was that a similar thing?
Yeah, that was actually our first commercial. So that was, it was less an article. It was a, so we did, so back to the strategy. So when we can be a purpose-driven brand and we can show our purpose and we can showcase this journey of healthcare, we can speak about issues that are important to consumers. And what's interesting is healthcare normally would never talk about anything like this, but the data in particularly in the state of New York suggested the number one issue for New Yorkers, and this was like 2 years ago, was the economy. The second issue was crime. The third issue was gun violence. The seventh issue was healthcare. So how do we use our platform to address this aspect of healthcare that guns are now the leading cause of death of children and help bend the curve? So I did not do that for more volume. I did that for for the movement part, the purpose part of who we are. So we created a commercial that tapped into this absurdity that we're here and we're at this place where guns are now the leading cause of death of children. Mm. And the ad was all about a family dropping off a kid to a play date, and they were concerned because they heard tiger noises. Would the tiger be locked up? Mm. And they get into this funny exchange, humorous exchange about the absurdity of a tiger. And the parents who own the house said, oh, of course, the tiger's locked up. You know, we never let him out by himself. And then we stopped the track and we introduced the fact that guns are now the leading cause of death for children in the United States, and that it doesn't kill to ask if there's an unlocked gun in the house.
But it might kill to not ask. Yeah.
Well, listen, think about it. We're in a society where parents have no issue dropping off Johnny and Susie to a play date and saying, Johnny has peanut allergies and Susie can't swim. Yeah. You know, can you refrain from peanuts? And do you have a pool? And here's this hidden danger that parents don't know about, that, you know, we would, there's these natural protective instincts that parents have that we can tap into to alert them to this lurking danger. And literally the majority of parents, first of all, only 20% of the marketplace knows that guns are the leading cause of death of children.
Well, I didn't know. Yeah,
so they're unwilling to have this conversation because they don't know they have to have it. So that was the whole energy behind the campaign. It did incredibly well in the New York market. We made it available to 157 other health systems across the U.S. They ran it in their marketplaces. It's now transitioned to a project where we're working with the Ad Council, a storytelling U.S.-based not-for-profit storytelling platform that deals with some of the biggest social issues that we have, including, you know, they were the inventors of Smokey the Bear. These are the guys who helped bend the curve on automobile accidents and drunk driving, and they're working with us now, or rather we're working with them to help convene healthcare, to partner with them, and to help bend this curve. So again, it's more our approach in allows you degrees of freedom to explore different ways of engaging with consumers. It's content in a different shape and form. In that case, it's paid. But it's very similar storylines that can do social good. And by doing social good, we can actually do better as an organization. They know us, they're predisposed to use us so that when they do have the health event, there's this positive connotation of who we are. And I still have to do the transactional stuff. You know, I got to inform people that I provide excellent clinical care. But I got to give them other reasons to believe that we're the right partner for them on their healthcare journey.
It's a great point to end on. I think it's the social good and doing good business. It's not mutually exclusive. In fact, it makes sense that the two go hand in hand, especially in this kind of industry that you're in. You know,
it's so true. And I don't know how it is in the UK, but over here, the social good stuff is under a bit of assault recently. You know, we've had our Budweiser moments and, corporate social responsibility, ESG, diversity, equity, inclusion, there seems to be this back from business to lead with those. I think they're accused of being woke. I think healthcare is a little bit of a different place in where we come from and where we show up. So we have license to push forward. And I am very hopeful that this is just a cycle that we're going through, and we get to this place where corporations should do social good, can do social good, and can return outsized shareholder value by doing that.
And I think people are more cynical when they see an organization that they perceive as actively doing harm. So, like, for example, if it's McDonald's, you're going to have a much higher, it's much more steep hill to climb, isn't it, when you're doing social good, to kind of counter what people perceive as being the harm that you're doing in that case. I think that's where the cynicism comes from a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think it's a tougher path for certain brands. I love my brothers and sisters professionals, by the way. So they're love you guys. Shout out to you. But they're, to your point, you know, if you show up and you call yourself a green institution, but it's not really authentic, kind of where we started, it's greenwashing. It's, and consumers are so smart today. They will, they will pick that up and pass through it. And you, you run the risk of doing more brand damage than brand good. So it very thoughtfully has to be part of your value proposition. And circling back to McDonald's for a second, McDonald's runs Ronald McDonald Houses across the US. They have one right across the street from our Children's Hospital. Parents who can't afford to take the journey with their kids who are sick, they sponsor them to come in. That is the perfect expression of that brand in terms of doing social good. So clearly you can, but as a brand, you have to think about it and you have to think about how you show up and how you commit to the communities that you serve.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Well, I could talk to you all day about this, Ramon. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. As you can see, I love this topic. I think there's so much to do and there's so much potential and opportunity behind this model. I actually secretly hope that others steal shamelessly from me because I do think the beneficiary is going to be society. And so I have no trouble talking about it and sharing a little bit of our secret sauce. I'll keep a couple secrets still secret, but you know, the more people listen, the more people understand, I think the more benefit for society that can come out of it.
Well, let's finish then if you to pass on the knowledge a little bit in broad terms, like for any CMO or anyone high up in marketing who's considering this kind of strategy, trying to convince the CEO or whatever, could you boil it down to three key pieces of advice maybe?
I'll make an offer if there's a CMO who wants to talk about this. We're a pretty open kimono open organization. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm more than willing to have a conversation with individuals and groups. I do think it gets to, there are a few things, and I hope this isn't repetitive, but you've heard me talk about them. The first is there needs to be strategic alignment. Like, you can't do this as a hobby. It has to be a purposeful part of your strategy. And so you have to go through your own alignment of this is a potential pathway for content creation and content distribution. Would it fit in your organization as an engagement strategy? Does it fit with your brand and how your brand shows up in the marketplace? Like, you got to do all that assessment up front because you don't want to learn that in the back end and then kind of stub your toe. Second, it's being a good student. There's a number of conferences out there. I'm going to speak at Sundance next week at one where you can learn more about this industry and how it's done. Now, we got a little lucky because we hooked up with great showrunners first who helped us learn. If I were to do it over again, I probably would have been a little bit more knowledgeable about what I was about to step into. But do your homework. What does it take? What's the effort? And build your own assessment on what the return is. And then the third piece is try to think through the stories that others want to tell and how it mixes with the stories you want to tell. Because the happy medium in the middle is really where the most value creation is going to be. And you got to be really thoughtful about where you place your strategic bets. You know, we've done the backdrop for a major motion picture and we show up like a Coke can. I'm not going to do many more of those. That's, they tend to be effort, very little return. I want to be, I'm comfortable not being the star. I'm comfortable playing second billing, but my doctors are the stars of these endeavors. So do you have like-minded partners who are really interested in doing that? And it doesn't have to be healthcare. It could be any category. You know, the products and services that we create as a society, they all fuel value. They all enable people to do things. And it's the power behind that. It's like three steps back. What is what is my industry, what is my product, what does my service allow individuals to do? What's that raw fuel? And think about the raw fuel as the place to start, as opposed to the widget that you create being the actual star of the equation.
Yeah,
you'll find a lot more degrees of freedom in terms of how to think about content creation and this particular pathway of storytelling to execute. And then I'm going to offer you a fourth. Distribution is incredibly important. So we've had a couple of projects where it was the best content never seen. And that does nothing for anyone. It's a waste of time, waste of resources. And my team gets tired of hearing me say this, but I'm not in the best content never seen category. So do you have distribution locked in? Do you have strong distribution partners? Are they like-minded in terms of their intentionality to get the story out into the marketplace? That's where HBO has been fabulous with us. The Netflix guys are brilliant marketers, very analytic and very data-driven. You know, learning that side of the equation so that you can have the conversation with those institutions, super important.
That's fantastic. That's
my secret sauce. I'm going to write a book, make no money on it, because I just told you all everything. And, but like I said, hopefully if we can bend some of these issues that we have in society and get things to a little bit better place, like that HBO show, One South, if we can affect one kid who's thinking about committing suicide and inspire them to seek help and to get better, I think it'll be a good day for me personally. I think it'll be a good day for society.
Thank you so much, Ramon. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of CMO Convo. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating and review on your preferred platform. Don't forget to tune in next week for another insightful conversation with a leading CMO.